Now, we're hearing this morning that Israeli tanks have moved further into Rafah, and there has been another warning issued by the Israeli military for people to get out. There's an estimate that 300,000 people have left so far, to what is not known in terms of the humanitarian provision for them. And it's been viewed as another sign that a large-scale offensive against the entire city is imminent. Diplomatically, you may have heard a resolution was passed by the UN General Assembly last night to grant Palestine membership of the United Nations. And there's an expectation now that Ireland and a number of EU countries will formally recognise the state of Palestine on May 21st or shortly thereafter. There's also been a hostage video released apparently by Hamas's military wing this morning. Well, we've been speaking to an Irish-Israeli man. He remains concerned for a 30-year-old woman who has close ties to his own family, who was taken hostage on October 7th when Hamas attacked his home village of Kfar Aza. He wants a ceasefire for the sake of both the hostages still accounted for and for the sake of Gazans who have endured bombardment since that date. However, he also believes that the wider world has never fully appreciated the suffering endured by his family and neighbours and friends when they were attacked on October 7th. Here's some of what he told me when we spoke earlier.
Hello, Colin. My name is Uri. I'm originally from a kibbutz known as Kfar Aza in the southwest of Israel, about 2 miles from the Gaza border. On the morning of October 7th, it was about 7 o'clock Irish time. Hundreds, and probably the numbers were in the thousands, of Hamas terrorists went all across our villages and literally went on a killing spree of house to house, and in the most brutal ways that one can imagine. In the story of my particular village, we lost over 10% of our population, with about 16 people were taken hostages.
And your mother, you live in Ireland, you have done for over two decades, but your mother was in Kfar Aza on the morning of October 7th. What happened to her?
So both my mother and my sister are living in the village. My sister and her husband, my mother by herself. My father passed away a number of years ago. On the morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I was going to my usual run, and I heard on the RT news that there is a barrage of rockets going over the village. And I knew this is a run-of-the-mill stuff. By 7 o'clock in the morning, my brother rang me and said, Uri, it's bad beyond belief. Straight away, I rang my mother, and she said, we're sitting in a safe room waiting. At that stage, the news were very sketchy. I was also talking to my sister. My sister's husband had to go to the house literally next door to them to find his next door neighbor being shot and to find her dead. And my mother was sitting in that safe room, which is a room in our house, which was built by, obviously, our government because of these constant rockets that fall in on our houses.
And was your mother in touch with you as the attack went on? Did she know what was going on outside the safe room?
So they did and they didn't. In the sense, first of all, we were in complete communication all the time. Funny enough, Colin, on that day, everybody in Ireland was watching the rugby. And so was I. But knowing that my mother is in deep, deep trouble. And we literally didn't know, because we knew that the terrorists are moving house to house. I knew more than my mother, in a sense. I knew more names of people who already were confirmed dead. I think that majority of people don't actually understand the magnitude of what happened on that day.
Why? You say that people don't understand the magnitude. You detect that, is it from what you see covered in Ireland or conversations with Irish people? You feel, is it that there was a lack of understanding about the impact of October 7th?
100%. And I don't want to go to my views about the response in Ireland. People are entitled to their opinion. I think that we sort of got so caught up with the horrific events that we are seeing in Gaza, which are, and it's unarguably, and I am not here to defend action of the Israeli government, which I personally very much oppose to the government. But the people outside Israel 100% do not understand the magnitude of the events that what happened that day. we understand that what's happening in Gaza is, you know, it's no one ever going to recover from it. But that does not say that whatever happened to my family, my friends, could be dismissed. You know, even you ask people many a time, would you agree that what happened in October 7th is genocide? And people in Ireland, they're just walking around that answer, and they wouldn't say it straightforward. And I see that within our politicians, and sometimes I see it within our media. And I'm not bashing our politician or our media or the street for whatever. But anyone that had the chance to talk to me about it says, I didn't know.
Unfortunately, given the events in October 7th, them being horrible in and of themselves, there has been condemnation of it, but they are being seen in comparison to the death toll of 35,000 people killed in Gaza, the amount of destruction wrought on the cities there, and the number of children, 14,500 killed there. The tragedy you speak of in your family, there are Palestinians today who are similarly dealing with those kind of tragedies amongst their neighbours, amongst their families.
100%. 100%, Colm. I come from a strong, very, very strong left-wing family. We're socialists. We believed in peace. And we believe in two-state solution. And we believe with peace in our neighbours. But what happened to us was not by people who wanted peace. And I'll tell you one thing. On the day that it happened, I actually been to work. And I met my boss, and I said to him, that's it. That's the end of Gaza. The Israel will just wipe Gaza off the map. And it break my heart that this is the situation. That is came to fruition. And it's horrific. There's absolutely no doubt about it. It's people dying all the time.
And
what?
You are close to a person who has been taken hostage, a woman you would regard as your foster sister. Her daughter was taken hostage, yeah, a 30-year-old. Do you think a ceasefire negotiation should have been entered into earlier to secure the release of all hostages, even though that obviously would have required compromise?
My family over the years looked after many, many people. One of them was a lovely lady, which we considered to be almost as our sister, and her daughter, 30 years of age, is still hostages, hopefully alive, but we really don't know. Let me be very clear. I think that the war should stop. The hostages should come back home. There's about 134 or so, 133 hostages still considered to be in Gaza. I think that the numbers talking that it is very clear now that only about a third of them are still alive. They should all come home, dead or alive, and the war should stop. But when the war will stop, that doesn't mean that my mother can go back home. And if it happened once, Israeli people believe that it will happen again.
Can I ask you then, just living in Ireland, you've seen obviously the evolution of the political reaction to this. Ireland is trying to advance within the European Union the case for the recognition of the state of Palestine. Is that the kind of action that's needed to drive forward a two-state solution, something that had been stuck in the sand before this?
I personally believe in two-state solution. A unilateral call from the likes of Ireland or Spain for the recognition of the state of Palestine won't lead to anything, right? At the end of the day, the only two people that can agree on two-state solution is Israel and Palestine. First of all, I think that the events of October 7th pretty much killed the idea of two-state solution, and not by an Israel. It's not by the wish of the Israelis. The second thing is Hamas chose to do what they did on the time when there is the most right-wing government in Israel. Also, Hamas, who are theoretically the elected leaders of the area known as Gaza, right, are recognized terror organizations. So do Israel have to then sit to the table with Hamas? When we're calling for the recognition of the state of Palestine, where is the state of Palestine? Because when people call from the river to the sea, it effectively means get rid of my mother. right? That's just...
I think, to be fair to people who are recognising the state of Palestine in terms of recognition of the borders, you're talking about the pre-1967 borders as the working basis for what would constitute the state of Palestine. That would be the understanding of the Palestinian Authority, and there's even tacit admission in the most recent version of the Hamas Charter that some Israel would have to exist even if it's not explicitly stated. I do want to ask you finally then, how has life changed for you in Ireland, if at all, since October 7th?
I never wanted to go on radio or express my feelings because I know where the streets, the majority of people are standing on their opinion. I don't want to upset anyone. I don't want to fall out with anyone. But I do feel, as majority of Israelis, it's just uncomfortable to be anywhere in the world at the moment when you see the so-called support for the Palestinian people is now replaced with pure hatred to Israel. And it is uncomfortable situation. I'm very proud of the fact that I'm from Israel. I didn't cause October 7th. I didn't vote for Benjamin Netanyahu or definitely no one of his government. But it is without a doubt uncomfortable.
And that was Uri Cohen. He's an Irish-Israeli man speaking to me earlier there. Minister Niall Collins is still with us, Minister of State for Further and Higher Education, Fianna Fáil TD for Limerick County. Also here in studio, Circa Clark, Sinn Féin TD for Longford West Meath and her party spokesperson on education, and Richard Boyd Barrett, People Before Profit TD for Dunlera and spokesperson on housing and further education. Niall Collins, you've heard what Uri Cohen has had to say there. I'll get to some of the other substantive issues that the government is involved in a moment, but some of the concerns he raised about sort of the feeling of, I suppose, number one, the situation on October 7th, the attack on Israel on October 7th being overlooked, and also the tenor of some of what's been expressed at protests spilling over into a general sense of people being anti-Israeli. Do you think he has a point, or do you think he's misinterpreting what's going on in Ireland?
Well, first of all, I think he made his points very reasonably. He seems to be a very moderate individual, and I congratulate him for setting out how he feels. Ireland, my own party, the government, everybody condemned the Hamas attacks on the 7th of October, roundly condemned them, and rightly so, because it was an act of terror inflicted on the people of Israel. But by any yardstick, the response from Israel, which has been inflicted on the people of Gaza subsequently, has been so completely disproportionate. I don't think Mr. Cohen needs to search too far and too wide to understand why the vast majority of people right across this country and growing right across the world are feeling how they feel and expressing how they feel towards Israel. I mean, Micheál Martin laid it out quite clearly in the Dáil last Thursday morning. We have 1.9 million people displaced in Gaza. We have 34,000 people dead. There's 17,000 minors, children who are now unaccompanied, left to fend for themselves in Gaza around Rafah. And Micheál Martin also laid out when he visited Rafah recently how he saw items, for example, a CT scanner, which was being denied access into Gaza, a green sleeping bag because he was told it could be used as camouflage, a children's education pack, croissants with chocolate and orange juice were considered luxury items. They weren't allowed in. So it's an attack. It's an attack on the civilian population. They're being collectively punished. And I think everybody is right to speak out and to call this out at this point in time, because we've had huge breaches of humanitarian international law. And we've been calling for a ceasefire. We've been calling for the release of hostages. And we've been calling for the ramping up of the humanitarian aid. But what we also have to speak about in parallel to all of this is where is the future? What is the future direction of this? We have to focus on the here and now and try and deal with the humanitarian situation. And that is why we are talking about the recognition of the state of Palestine. I welcome the decision which was taken at the UN General Assembly yesterday. And that's why Ireland, Micheál Martin, and Taoiseach Simon Harris have been progressing that notion also with our European partners.
All right. I'll come back to you on that. Circa Clark, the issue raised there, it's been raised, I suppose, by students on campuses and the like, are there areas of concern where some of the sentiments being expressed at protests, whether that's the intent of people or not, are having the effect of making people who are from Israel, who are living in Ireland, feel less than comfortable or even, I suppose, even anxious?
I could imagine that there certainly is. I would imagine that there are, as that gentleman very, very well articulated there, his family's experience of what happened at the beginning of October, which was condemned and should be condemned as an absolutely heinous attack that took place. However, I find myself in the rather uncomfortable position of agreeing with Niall when we say that what came afterwards is in no way comparable to the events of that day. So from that gentleman's
should they be viewed in comparison, I suppose,
no,
is one of the points that's been made.
I understand that gentleman's perspective. They shouldn't be compared, and in no way are they comparable. So the actions on that day were wrong. They should never have happened. And I think if you look back over decades at this point, the Irish have always had an affinity to some degree with Israel, but that doesn't mean that they're going to stand by and condone the actions of the Israeli state or of the IDF. And people likewise in Ireland have a growing affinity with the Palestinians and want to see them have their own homeland and somewhere that they are safe to be, somewhere that they are not going to be subjected to land grabs, somewhere that they are not going to be subjected to bombardments, to somewhere that those unaccompanied minors that were spoken about can be safe and can grow into adulthood and can be very productive and very happy in that time. But we do also need to remember that when Micheál Martin spoke in the Dáil last Thursday, he wasn't in a position to give my colleague McCarthy a timeline of when Ireland would recognise the state of Palestine. And that's something that Sinn Féin want to see happen. We want to see it happen urgently and we want that timeline. Now, there was rumours put out there of the end of May as being one, but I would just draw your listeners' attention to the fact that it's almost a decade since the Dáil unanimously passed a Sinn Féin motion calling for the recognition of the state of Palestine. That needs to happen.
I'll come back to Niall Collins on that. Richard Boyd-Barrett, some of the points raised there. Do you think there is a danger that in and of itself the attacks on October 7th are being viewed comparatively and maybe not being seen as an atrocity in and of themselves?
Well, I think the relationship between the genocidal massacre that Israel has committed over the last 7 months against the people of Gaza and the events of October the 7th is not understood, but not in the way that's being discussed. All of this is horrible. All deaths are tragic and unnecessary, but absolutely all of the violence is the responsibility of Israel. All of it. Because the apartheid system that it has imposed on the Palestinian people is a criminal, racist system. It has been involved in a 17-year siege of Gaza, which had reduced, long before October, Gaza to a permanent humanitarian catastrophe. There have been successive military assaults.
So are you saying that the people who went house to house in Kfar Aza killing people on October 7th had absolutely no agency in their actions and that the blame can be laid entirely at the door of Israel for people who killed innocent civilians on that day?
I am saying that as long as you have a system of apartheid, of oppression, of a siege, of ethnic cleansing on an ongoing basis by the state of Israel, there will be violence. Inevitably, because all of those things are maintained by violence, by a military, Israeli military machine, and of course, inevitably.
So violence is, it's
the state is built on violence. It's built on violence since 1948, the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people.
There are many injustices in the world that you fight against yourself, but you don't resort to violence.
I am simply stating, wherever you have colonisation and apartheid, the people who are colonised and are the victim of the system of oppression resist. They did in Ireland. They did in Vietnam, they did in Algeria, they did in South Africa.
You're sitting across the table from a member of a party who signed up to a peace agreement and decided that the alternative was preferable to the use of violence that was killing
civilians. The Palestinians tried the peace agreement and Israel made a mockery of it. They tore up Oslo pretty much the day after the Oslo agreement was signed.
And Hamas didn't help matters by sending suicide bombs into Israel either.
Colin,
I just want to bring you back to... to the issue at hand.
No, no, because unless you address the root of this, you're wasting your time. You're wasting your breath.
So there should be no examination of individual atrocities until there's an overarching peace agreement that solves it all in one swoop.
No, there should be a dismantling of apartheid. There should be the right of the Palestinians to return, the refugees to return.
And until then, anything goes.
Colin, the reason I'm involved in politics is because I was in Palestine in 1987 during the first Intifada, okay? There was no Hamas. No Hamas at all. There was no PLO even. Young people rose up against the brutality of the Israeli occupation. All that followed, even the formation of Hamas as a political organisation, resulted from the brutal suppression
Eight years later, the Palestinian people had put their trust in a peace process that admittedly didn't deliver for them. But they did attempt in the initial stages to go down to the road of peace. And by the late 1990s, early 2000s, Hamas were taking actions that was inimical to
Israel destroyed the Oslo
And nobody's disputing that settlements were built on Palestinian land that severely and continuously undermines the prospects of a two-state solution.
But what people are disputing is that it's an apartheid system.
But are you still standing...
They are disputing that.
4 days... not many human rights organisations.
Exactly.
Even those within
Israel. Western governments won't acknowledge it.
Four days after the attacks that Uri Cohen was talking about on his family, your party issued a statement that said this was not some murderous, unprovoked assault on innocent civilians, and the areas attacked by Hamas are not simply some bucolic towns or villages. Do you think that lessens the innocence of the civilians that were killed when it's contextualised like that?
No, because all the deaths are terrible, all of them. But the fact is that the Palestinian refugees in Gaza, fenced in by Israel, have a right to live in those villages.
And they have no choice but violence.
Let me finish, Colin. They have a right to live in those villages too, under international law. They have the right to return. Those kibbutzim are built on former Palestinian villages from which the refugees in Gaza formerly lived. They were driven out by violence and terror gangs in 1948. I'm simply saying under international law, that's a fact.
Sure, but
the right to return of the Palestinian
refugees. But under international law, it is not justifiable to kill civilians.
What I am simply saying is, if you deny people your rights, you inevitably will get resistance. Inevitably. As I said, there's no place where that hasn't been the case. I want to go back to Niall Collins.
Niall Collins, can you give us an update on what's likely in terms of the advancing of the recognition of the state of Palestine? We've heard the date of May 21st. We've seen the UN General Assembly vote. When will we see movement by Ireland in Europe on that?
Well, hopefully as soon as possible. I think we have to be very clear that Ireland as a state on our own, we were right to try and build a coalition, bring as many people around us, like-minded people, to develop a movement towards the recognition of the state of Palestine. It would be fine if Ireland moved forward on our own and recognised the state of Palestine, and we would be very happy with ourselves within Ireland. But I think we have to use our international standing and use our credibility on the international stage as a big international player, Micheál Martin, Simon Harris, using the fact that we're militarily neutral and harnessing all of the levers that we have through our contacts in the United Nations, and then bring as many people around us and make that decision, because we have to start talking about the future here, Colm.
All right. You don't have a hard deadline, you don't have a hard day for us today, do you?
Well, I don't have it for you today, okay. but I would say this. I've been to the West Bank, I've been to Ramallah, I've been to Hebron, I've seen the proliferation of the Palestinian territories, and it just simply cannot continue. The whole settler movement across Palestinian lands. So we have to come to a final solution in the Middle East, and it is going to take a lot of work, but we have to move on the recognition of the state of Palestine as soon as possible.
I want to go something closer to your brief, closer to home. Trinity College is revising its ties with Israeli projects and indeed with Israeli universities at the moment. If that results in a financial loss, will the state make good that loss?
Well, first of all, look, it's open to any student body, any students' union, or indeed staff representatives to make their protest, and they make their protest peacefully. And I welcome the fact that they have spoken to the management of Trinity College. As you know, all our higher education institutions, the governance of higher education institutions are independent from government, and they're very precious about protecting their own independence. So it's up to our higher education institutions to make their own decisions in terms of the funding. In terms of the funding,
the Taoiseach, to be fair, did say he'd encourage universities to reflect on their links to Israel and to consider divestment. So if it's coming at the encouragement of the Taoiseach, if there are consequences, should the government make good those consequences?
Well, the government is making good the funding gaps right across our higher education sector. There's a recognised funding deficit, which was a settled figure of €307 million. We've closed a gap on that across two budgets to date over the lifetime of this government by about €104 million, and we continue to do that over the next budget.
Okay, just yes or no on this specific issue. Should they be reimbursed if there are financial losses?
Well, I can't give a commitment on that.
Oh, no, that's fair enough. In the here now, but should the government make good any financial losses?
I think the government needs to properly divest? Fund our higher education institutes to start off with. Niall was very quick to throw out figures there, but what he fails to mention is that there wasn't a single red cent capital student accommodation in the government's own budget of last year. Sinn Féin had put aside
€100 million.
And also what you see very much from the students who took part in the protest in Trinity, and we need to recognise this, is these are a group of people who have been very much to the fore of other social issues over the years. Look at climate action being one example, climate justice in that area. And Trinity is in a kind of unusual situation as well compared to other other universities. I don't know if you've seen the reports this morning that there was a certain individual that said that they were going to withdraw their investment in the university. They are unusual in the fact that they actually have investments in the university to begin with. And I think what you're going to see now on the back of what the students in Trinity achieved is students in other higher education institutes actually calling on their management to say, we need to follow suit on various different issues.
And if there are financial losses, should the government make good those losses?
But there shouldn't be financial losses to begin with if it was properly funded.
Okay, but if there are, I mean, if there are specific grant losses on projects like this, should the government make them whole?
I can't answer that, Colin, without knowing exactly what the number is, and I won't do something as irresponsible.
Okay, Richard Boyd Barrett, what do you think? If there are financial losses to universities for taking what they believe is an ethical position, should the government reimburse the colleges for any losses made?
The college should never have been dependent on deals with Israeli companies or Israeli universities in order to finance itself, or for that matter, the Book of Kells. I mean, it's preposterous that you have to pay, I think it's €19 to go and see a piece of national heritage. And the idea that Trinity College has to be funded by that, it's absolutely crazy. The underfunding of higher education is the issue, but I just want to commend the Trinity students. I was in at the occupation myself. I know many of the people involved.
I've seen, sorry, just figures, €15 to €25 to see the Book of Kells. Anyway,
it's exactly... It's outrageous.
Anyway,
and the fact that they are dependent on that to source themselves or to have relationships with a state committing genocide and guilty of apartheid. And I think I just want to pay a tribute to the Trinity students. And I think you will see this is going to spread as it is across the United States, Britain, into other colleges and campuses of people saying, we have to do with Israel what was done with apartheid South Africa. Apartheid has no place in the civilised world, and we have to break off all relations. And fair play to the Trinity students, and I hope others and trade unions and others will
follow.
We have
to take a break because we have to come back with another issue, the issue of the funding of the summer programme for people with additional needs. We're going to look at that after this.
Saturday with Conor Mo Mungon on RTE Radio 1.